Tayan jar malarebe, Nanjurje wanzo malarebe song, Oma yang da bajoba, yang so cherche, Gomdan nyamdo, yang so cherche, Gomdan chapche do yang so cherche. Same round of majoba, loje loje, yang so cherche.
Now, once again, please sing the Lord of Yogis Milarepa's song, An Authentic Portrait of the Middle Way. And while you're singing, meditate. Meditate while singing, meditate. While singing, let your mind relax in its own basic nature.
Tada gom de yomi ye gom. Yo ame pe gom de, yo adan che pe gom de. Yomi yo adan che pe gom la lo jong zo gom. Moma yomi ye gom ma bu jao sun cha. Ta yo pe gom go.
In the past, you've meditated a lot by keeping your mind still and not moving. So now it's time to train in meditation while your mind is moving. Moving and moving rest within the nature beyond movement. Experiencing confusion after confusion, seek out the unconfused nature. Forgetting again and again, rely on mindfulness that is stable and does not forget. While projecting, relax in the abiding nature of reality. Just like how a screensaver sends out lots of light and then brings it all back in, be just like that. It is taught that elaborations are what lead to the unelaborate. So first one elaborates and sends out a lot, and by doing that, one then gathers it all in and rests in the unelaborate.
Yeah, thanks.
From the standpoint of the truth that's genuine. That was a very nice song you sang beautifully. In the Vajrayana, it's taught that singing helps to open your channel, so that if you're tight and tense and you sing, then that helps to make you relax and be spacious. Sometimes if you meditate and you try too hard, then that makes your channels close, and by singing it opens them up. Sometimes when you study too hard or you work too hard, then you get tense and again your channels close up. So singing is what helps it be
open.
That's why singing Vajra songs from time to time is important.
I'll
begin today by giving you the reading transmission for the text I composed called Lightning Sparks of Wisdom. This is a summary of each chapter of the Fundamental Wisdom of the Middle Way, a summary of its meaning in connection mainly with meditating on the true nature of mind, meditating on Mahamudra. And I composed these verses in a way that summarized the meaning of the chapter in a way that is clear and concise and easy to understand. So I hope that these verses will make the chapters of the text easier for you to understand. In the book, The Sun of Wisdom, in each chapter, that is the explanation of that particular chapter in the Fundamental Wisdom of the Middle Way, you'll find sometimes one, sometimes more verses from the Fundamental Wisdom of the Middle Way quoted and explained. I picked the verses from each chapter that are important but also clear in their meaning and encapsulating a lot of the meaning of the essence of that particular chapter. And people say that it's translated into English in a way that's clear and easy to understand. So if those verses and the commentary are sufficient, then you don't need any more than that. You don't need to hear more explanation. If you hear more explanation about something you already understand, then that doesn't help. When the root verses were translated from Sanskrit into Tibetan, then they had to follow a particular meter. There's a limit to the number of syllables per line. And when you have that, then you have to leave out a lot of the grammatical particles and explanations. And so it's impossible to understand what the root verses mean without a commentary. But in English, there's not that restriction of meter, and so you can make the root verses clear to understand on their own face. So they incorporate the commentary together. That's very good. This year I've been explaining primarily the Sun of Wisdom, and most people say it's clear and easy to understand. Other people say it's difficult, and other people say it seems like it would take many lifetimes to be able to really understand it. And so that's the way it is. People have different ideas. Some people say it's easy, some people say it's hard, some people say they understand it, some people say they can't. It just depends on your point of view and how you think about it. And so I wrote this Lightning Sparks of Wisdom to connect the meaning of each chapter, to summarize the meaning of each chapter, and also to make a connection with that and Mahamudra in many instances. And so you can use this as a supplement to the Sun of Wisdom. Read the Sun of Wisdom, and if there are things in the Sun of Wisdom you don't understand, then you can refer to these verses. And also, if these verses are unclear, you can refer to what's said in the Sun of Wisdom. And so I think they'll be very beneficial in a mutual way with the book.
ngobo dendrop do khelemba namje tene tanda ngobo dendrop yimbe duze tomba mayimba dendrop yimbe duze rangin jitrope duze kangdang kang khelama te raba yendo kape tene rabze nika tsa den songre.
In the fundamental wisdom of the middle way, the first chapter is an examination of causal conditions, and this chapter is a refutation of the argument that people made who said that things truly exist, when they said that things truly exist because causes and conditions truly exist, and that arising truly exists. And from that point on, throughout the 27 chapters, Nagarjuna refutes successively all of the different arguments that those who believe that things truly exist put to him. In each chapter, he refutes one argument after another. This text was, these 27 chapters were sufficient to refute all of the arguments that people put to Nagarjuna who believe that things truly exist. It refutes all the arguments that existed at that time for why things truly exist. Now in the modern day, with science and different technology, people might come up with new arguments for why things truly exist. So then we have to see what the new arguments are for why things truly exist and how we can apply the middle way reasoning to them.
And
the reason why we have to actively analyze in this way is that for as long as someone believes that that things truly exist, one will not be able to realize the true nature of reality beyond conceptual fabrication. And so what students of the middle way have to do is to look at these arguments for why things truly exist and apply their own analysis and point out to others the logical flaws in the belief, however it might be presented, that is the argument for why something truly exists. See what's the flaw in that argument. So one good thing for us to do in our meditation session this afternoon would be to read together the verses from the sutra quotations that are at the beginning of each chapter, and for the translator to give a little bit of explanation about the briefer ones. Some of them are longer than the others, so I think that would be good, but of course you might have a different idea. It's up to you.
It's
easier if we have more question and answer at that time, when you can ask the questions in English and the answer can be given in English, because then it doesn't have to be translated and then translated back. Once the answer is given, it can proceed much more quickly if it can just be done directly in one language.
Okay, kira mi ma da ha cha ma bu sha ra kan ga ha ko yu lo sa wa ka ha ko yu.
So this is the translator who translated the book, and also he's been translating for all of my teachings at the different centers on this book, so I think he knows what the book is about. Let's recite the verse from chapter 1, An Examination of Causal Conditions, from the Lightning Sparks of Wisdom. These various thoughts of attachment and aversion seem to arise from causes and conditions, but when you examine their causes and conditions, you find they are unborn, beyond conceptual fabrication, so know these thoughts have no inherent nature. Given the various thoughts of attachment and aversion, they do not have any nature of their own, because when you examine their causes and conditions, you find that these causes and conditions in their true nature are beyond conceptual fabrication. The way that the fundamental wisdom of the middle way presents it is to analyze arising and show that it doesn't actually happen because it doesn't happen from any of the four possible extremes. Here, what this verse is instructing us to do is to look at our own attachment and aversion that we experience in our minds, and then examine the causes for those thoughts and see what their nature is. Chapter 2, An Examination of Coming and Going. The mind thinks a variety of good and bad thoughts, but since their coming and going are imperceptible, know that thought's true nature is free from coming and going, and that thoughts are dependently arisen mere appearances.
In
this chapter, in the text, The Fundamental Wisdom of the Middle Way, Nagarjuna examines outer physical objects and shows how they don't actually move. So, for example, looking at somebody walking down a path and showing that that motion is not occurring in genuine reality. Here, I connect it with the thoughts in the mind. And so if we made a logical reasoning out of this verse, we would say, given the variety of good and bad thoughts in our mind, they have no nature of their own because they do not come from anywhere, they do not go anywhere, and because they are dependently arisen, mere appearances. With one's own thoughts of attachment and aversion, it's easy to see that they don't come from anywhere and they don't go anywhere because They don't come from anywhere to the mind, and they don't go anywhere from the mind to somewhere else. So how could they be here now? So they're empty because they're empty of coming and going. In terms of outer things, that's more difficult because when you see somebody walking down a path, it looks like they're really walking on that path, and you think that it's something truly existent. So it's more difficult to analyze and determine that that is free from coming and going. But with your mind, you can just look at your own experience and see that it's easy. For example, if your mind is just resting, relaxed, and then all of a sudden you have a thought of anger, it's easy to see that that anger didn't come from anywhere and doesn't go anywhere. When you know that the anger doesn't come and go, you know that it has no self-nature. Someone might say, well, if the anger doesn't come or go, maybe it was always there. But that's not right, because if the anger was always there, your mind would always be angry. But it's not like that. It's just a dependently arisen mere appearance that's free of coming and going. It's like if there's a family of a father, a mother, and a child, and they all come home at night. The father's tired and the mother's tired from work, and the child comes home tired from school, and then they're cranky and they get angry at each other. Then that anger didn't come from anywhere and doesn't go anywhere. It's just a dependently arisen mere appearance. It's fleeting.
And if you find yourself in that
situation, and you can recognize that your thoughts of being tired and angry didn't come from anywhere and they don't go anywhere, then the anger will naturally dissolve, won't it?
Then rabde samba chinji jab dudone nanda si chinji la nafsi remba manje mate chin kicha toya mate se rangi mebar samba.
Chapter 3 is an examination of the sources of consciousness. The inner and outer sources of consciousness cannot logically exist sequentially and cannot logically exist simultaneously, and so the Buddha taught that they have no nature of their own. In this verse, in terms of the structure of a logical reasoning, the first line is the subject, the inner and outer sources of consciousness. The last line is what we want to prove about that subject, that they have no nature of their own. And what proves it are the middle two lines. So the inner and outer sources of consciousness have no nature of their own because they cannot logically exist sequentially and they cannot logically exist simultaneously.
Chenje chunye denpa trunaka gande kante chukukudu se na ဒီကြီးတော့ဒံပါတော်နာငကြီးကြီးလက်တွေ့မှာကိုပါတော့ပါတော့ဘူးကတော့နာငကြီးကြီးတော့ဒံပါတော်နာစိတ်ကြီးကြီးလက်တွေ့မှာကိုပါတော့ပါတော့ဘူးကတော့နာငကြီးကြီးတော့ဒံပါတော်နာစိတ်ကြီးကြီးလက်တွေ့မှာကိုပါတော့ပါတော့ဘူးကတော့နာငကြီးကြီးတော့ဒံပါတော်နာစိတ်ကြီးကြီးလက်တွေ့မှာကိုပါတော့ပါတော့ဘူးကတော့နာငကြီးကြီးတော့ဒံပါတော်နာစိတ်ကြီးကြီးလက်တွေ့မှာကိုပါတော့ပါတော့ဘူးကတော့နာငကြီးကြီးတော့ဒံပါတော
Here, the way that the inner and outer sources of consciousness are examined is in terms of their status as being the outer sources of consciousness are the perceived objects, and the inner sources of consciousness are the perceiving subjects. And you look at them and you understand that if they truly exist, then the perceived object would have to be able to exist independently from its own side, and the perceiving subject would have to be able to exist independently from its own side. But they can't, because a perceived object can't exist without something to perceive it. Otherwise, there's no perceived object if there's no perceiver. And at the same time, the perceiver can't exist without some object to perceive. So whenever you have a moment of sense perception, then you know that it's not truly existent, because the object of perception and the perceiving subject exist only in mutual dependence. They can't exist sequentially, because if they existed sequentially, they'd be independent, but then there'd be a perceived object without a perceiver, or a perceiver without a perceived object, and that's impossible. And they can't exist simultaneously either, because if they did and they had their own nature, then they would be independent entities without any connection. And since they can't exist sequentially and they can't logically exist simultaneously, then they're dependently arisen mere appearances, just like the objects and the perceiving subjects that appear in dreams.
Dene malandu sagong da nyeda zakat zu domo ka so yo sagong da nyeda zakat zu mama ni yere tanda nge aran sarpan dong so sam ba nam do yere ina ya malaj sagong nyeda zakar te te ta yo ta yo chin la nga so yo mare ten den na da re ma to mama ne thok te ba ten da o mare.
When you have a dream of looking at the sun or the stars or the planet Earth, then it seems like these objects, the sun and the earth and the stars, were there before you started looking at them. But that's what we think. But they're not. Because whatever object you perceive exists only in dependence upon there being a perceiving subject. It has no existence apart from, before, or independent from that. And so perceived and perceiver don't truly exist. They're just dependently arisen mere appearances.
Dene nga su sagongda nyeda zakarta so yang mlanje sagongda nyeda zakarta nyimu sagongda nyeda zakar ni yure te mtila seka te mlanje sagongda nyeda zakar je na ware seka te nyimu sagongda mlanje na ware tenra wo yimbe sena dene
sun and the moon and the stars and the earth that we perceive in dreams, and the sun and the moon and the stars and the earth that we perceive during the day. And we spend about half our lives with the daytime ones and half our lives with the dream ones. And we have to see what the relationship between these two sets of appearances is. If it were as we think, which is that the daytime appearances truly exist, but the nighttime ones don't, then in between these two sets of truly existent appearances, you'd have nothing. You'd have this gap of falsity. So then how could there be any connection? What would be making the connection between daytime appearance, nighttime appearance, and again, daytime appearance? Right? The only way that they can really be is if they're of the same quality. Then there can be all kinds of connections between day and night and day and night. Because they all lack any inherent nature, because they are all dependently arisen mere appearances, then there can be connections.
Remda chikir mendebe nando mulantabriki.
Chapter 4, an examination of the aggregates. Causal forms, the four great elements, and resultant forms, the five sense faculties and their five objects, cannot logically exist sequentially or simultaneously. So no, they are appearance emptiness like dreams.
Juzu jung yedang. Sa chu me long de jung yedang. Dezu kwang bu nga ta tong are. De la dene tanda jotan devu goni tapare. Tena juzu jung yedang. Dezu wang a tonga chuchi. Rang yinje madrup te. De la yang. Mapsetan chichetum devise.
Here, the aggregates are examined from the perspective of their causal components and resultant components. So if we look at the aggregate of forms, then the causal forms are the four great elements of earth, water, fire, and wind. And the resultant forms are the five sense faculties and their five objects. So we have these two groups within the aggregate of forms, the causal forms and the resultant forms. And then if you ask, well, how could they exist in relation to each other? They couldn't exist sequentially, and they couldn't truly exist simultaneously, and therefore they are just appearance and emptiness. The way that the middle way explains is that when it says that something doesn't exist, that means it doesn't truly exist. It doesn't negate the appearance of the thing. It just says that the appearance is not the appearance of something real. It's a dependently arisen mere appearance.
Ravzi ngaba kanta bududune. Sacho melo namga da nambar hibe kanan. Senzun sede jebeze.
Chapter 5, an examination of the elements. Considering the elements of earth, water, fire, wind, space, and consciousness, when you distinguish between their defining characteristics and that which is defined, and then analyze, you cannot find even the tiniest bit of true existence.
Here,
the way that Nagarjuna analyzes the elements is from the perspective of looking at them as their defining characteristics and that which is defined by those characteristics, or the basis of imputation and the name. So if you look at the defining characteristics and the elements defined by those characteristics, you see that they can't truly exist sequentially, and they can't exist simultaneously, and therefore they don't truly exist.
동행
For example, if we look at space, then the defining characteristics would be that would be the emptiness and the unobstructedness, the allowing for movement, and that which is defined would be space. So then you have to ask, well, how do these exist in relation to each other? The space couldn't exist first, before the defining characteristics, because if it did, it would be space that didn't have the defining characteristics of being empty and allowing for movement. The way that it's classically described is that you have the defining characteristics, the definiendum, meaning that which is defined, and the illustrating example. So with fire, the defining characteristics would be hot and burning. The definiendum would be fire. And an illustrating example that brings these two together would be a sandalwood fire. And it couldn't be the case that the fire existed before its defining characteristics, or else it would be fire without defining characteristics. The defining characteristics can't exist before that which they define either, because if they did, they would be defining characteristics that didn't define anything.
Better than the madro besena, then it don't tambar, kamna madroba, consult the tendinans and the droba, melanta.
When you examine in this way, you can find that the five or the six elements do not truly exist, that their appearances are dependently arisen mere appearances, just like when the elements appear in dreams. Chapter 6 is an examination of desire and the desirous one. The one who desires and the one who is desired do not have any truly existent self. So how could the desire possibly exist? Know that it is the great original purity and freedom. This chapter is an explanation of the passage from the chapter on perfect purity from the 100,000 verse edition of the Prajnaparamita Sutras, where, for example, the Buddha taught desire is perfectly pure and therefore form is perfectly pure. The chapter on perfect purity takes up more than one whole volume of this sutra of 100,000 verses on the Prajnaparamita, and it explains the perfect purity of everything, and Nagarjuna proves that chapter's teachings validity with logical reasoning.
Docha chuchin, ranginji mide, chakpa pukanza ka dada madrupa kaange, chayur simchin yang, kanza ka dada madrupa se.
If we made a logical reasoning for this verse, we would say, given desire, its nature is perfect purity and freedom because the one who has desire doesn't have any truly existent self, and the one who is desired doesn't have any truly existent self, and so then the desire itself can't possibly exist. This is a way of presenting this examination of desire that is made directed towards those who follow the Shravakayana, because those who follow the Shravakayana assert that there's no self in the individual, but they don't assert that the desire lacks inherent nature. They still believe the desire truly exists. But this shows the steps, because once you accept that there's no self, then you know that the one who experiences the desire doesn't truly exist, and the one who is the object of the desire doesn't have any truly existent self either. So then you can see that the desire doesn't truly exist quite easily. If you still believe that the self truly exists, then this reasoning won't make immediate
sense.
For those who still believe that the self truly exists, then first one has to explain the reasons why the self doesn't truly exist. And then, once they accept that, if they still believe that the desire truly exists, then you can present the reasoning this way and say the desire doesn't truly exist because the one who experiences it has no truly existent self, and the one who is the object of it doesn't have any truly existent self either. So how could the desire be real if the one who has it and the object of it are not? When you realize that the true nature of desire is emptiness, then desire is not something to be abandoned, but it's something you can meditate on. You can meditate on its true nature. It's the same thing with suffering. The idea is to analyze and determine the true nature of suffering so that you can meditate on it. Determine the true nature of suffering as emptiness and then meditate on that, and the suffering is self-liberated. And that's the way that Padampa Sanjay taught to meditate on suffering in his practice called the genuine Dharma that dissolves suffering. So what you do when you practice that is, you don't even concern yourself with the causes of suffering. You just look straight at the suffering itself, determine its nature as emptiness, and rest in that in meditation, and the suffering dissolves all by itself.
Tene dorje tepe lola, nyumunga ne lo gombe, gomba te, tene tondanjin chepa la yin kepa re, yambar tenju ji tsike mambu yere.
When you know the true nature of the kleshas, the disturbing states of mind, and you meditate on that, then in the Vajrayana, that's called the ultimate offering. In, for example, the Tantra called Praising the Names of Manjushri, then it goes through all of the kleshas, one after the other, and says how they are the ultimate offerings. So who are you offering to? You're offering to the ultimate deity, which is your own Buddha nature, the true nature of your mind, which is luminous clarity. And that's the true nature of the disturbing emotions, too. And when you realize that, then you're making an offering to your own true nature of mind, of luminosity. The true nature of mind is the enlightened essence of the Buddha nature, luminous clarity, and that is the ultimate deity and the ultimate mandala. And the true nature of the disturbing states of mind, the kleshas, is also luminous clarity. And so in reality, there's no difference between the ultimate deity of luminosity and the true nature of the disturbing states of mind. And so that in that way, when you know that, you can see how these meditations on their true nature are the ultimate offering. There's a very good reason for why that is. Here the way that that's described in this verse about chapter 6 is to say that the true nature of the one who experiences the desire and the true nature of the one who's the object of the desire and the true nature of the desire itself are all equally perfect purity. They're all equally beyond conceptual fabrication. And since they are, then in that transcendence of conceptual fabrication, there's no stain. And so they're all perfectly pure. And in terms of their relative appearance, then the appearance of the one who's desired and the one who feels the desire and the desire itself are all equally like dreams, illusions, and water moons. And it's explicitly this presentation here connected with desire, but we should apply it to all the kleshas, one after the other, all the disturbing states of mind, and see, they're all exactly the same. So we could say, in a logical reasoning, given anger, it has no nature of its own, because the one who gets angry does not truly exist, and the one who is the object of the anger does not truly exist. It's just like anger in a dream. Or with jealousy. We could say, given jealousy, it has no self-nature, because the one who experiences the jealousy does not exist as a self, and because the one who is the object of the jealousy does not truly exist, just like jealousy that you experience in a dream. Or with pride. Given pride, it does not truly exist, because the one who experiences the pride doesn't exist truly as a self. There's no self in that individual. And the things that are making that person proud have no essence either.
Tene tomok chujin, tomok je rang, tomok chujin rang kinji madrop te, tomok chinji kaza dada madrop se, tela yor jago mado, tomok, mong sare, yor sarbo yamare.
With ignorance, we would just say, given the ignorance, it doesn't truly exist because the one who is ignorant has no self, truly. And we don't need to talk about an object of the ignorance because the object of the ignorance is unclear. That's why it's ignorance. In the teachings of the second turning of the wheel of Dharma, ignorance is described as having a true nature beyond conceptual fabrication. In the Vajrayana, it's described as being of the nature of luminous clarity. And that's why you can practice the yoga of luminosity to purify ignorance and in fact realize that the nature of ignorance of mental darkness is actually luminosity. If ignorance truly existed, you could meditate on luminosity all you wanted, it wouldn't clear away the ignorance. So in this way, we should examine all of the kleshas, all of the disturbing states of
mind.
And when we do, what we find is that all of the kleshas are equally in their true nature, beyond any concept of what they might be. They are all in their true nature, perfectly pure.
And
the Vajrayana is a set of practices for how you take these disturbing states of mind and make them into the path. And that's what deity meditation in the Vajrayana is too. It's a method for taking the kleshas and making them into the path.
Ta rabzi dumba duze tab dudune duze ngubu chu namla jenga neba mamekse mulan chuda jigindu rangi mebar kebarza.
Chapter 7 is an examination of the composite. Let's read this verse together. With all composite things, arising, abiding, and ceasing are imperceptible. So know they are like dreams and water moons. They have no inherent nature. In this verse, the first line is the subject of the reason. The second line is the proof. The third line is the example. And the fourth line is the conclusion to be proved. So we would say, given all composite things, go down to the fourth line. They have no inherent nature because they do not arise, abide, or cease. Just like what appears in a dream, just like the moon on the surface of a pool of water. If arising, abiding, and ceasing don't truly occur, then what is the quality of their appearance that we perceive? What is that all about? Well, Nagarjuna answers that question in the Fundamental Wisdom of the Middle Way by writing, like a dream, like an illusion, like a city of Gandharvas. That's how birth, and that's how living, That's how dying are taught to be. That all of these, when they appear, are just dependently arisen, mere appearance. Some people think you can examine. Some people think you can examine arising and see that arising doesn't happen from any one of the four possibilities, self, other, both, or without cause, but nevertheless, arising still truly occurs because it's perceptible, and so they invent a theory that of arising that occurs in a way not involving any one of the four possibilities. Well, that idea is a mistake of confusing arising that appears with genuine arising. Because once you analyze all the possibilities and you find that arising can't happen from any of them, then you can conclude that the arising that appears is not truly existent arising. So we shouldn't confuse the way things appear with the way they really are. Now let's sing an authentic portrait of the middle way. Rest a little bit. Rest and meditate together.
Yeah. Ta razi jeba sepa pota le ta pdu ne sepo da do madev sir le chan rangi me par ki sepo turba ta bta le ne yan tur ta bur so.
Chapter 8, an examination of actors and actions. Since the actor has no self, know the action does not truly exist. The actor is like an emanation, and the action like an emanation of an emanation.
Le seba bo le la tuba dan le seba bo la tuba sena nika rangi je madu pare. Ti sena Sepapu Turpatabatan Sepapu Le Sepapu Le Sabata Yantra Tabasoma Turpata Yantra Tab.
For there to be an actor, there must be an action. The actor's existence depends upon the existence of an action. But the action's existence depends upon the existence of an actor. And therefore, neither one of them can truly exist, because they can only exist in mutual dependence. And so, the appearance of the actor is like the appearance of an emanation. And the appearance of the action is like an emanation of that emanation. An example of emanations is like the example of the moon that appears in the sky. That would be like the basis of the emanation. And all of the reflections of the moon that appear in the pools of water on the ground, you could have as many reflections as you wanted, just depends on how many pools of water you have. All of those reflections are like the emanations. So in that way, an emanation is an example of appearance and emptiness. It's an image of a form that doesn't truly exist.
Tene zokoni longko da truko te ye dan kado ye ba da won ki ji yo du tu bi se na tene zongi sa re zen ta to ko sanje ma re.
With the Buddha, how the Buddha relates to emanations is that the ultimate or the genuine Buddha is the Dharmakaya. It's beyond being an object of the senses. And the two form kayas, the Nirmanakaya and the Nirmanakaya that appears to the impure disciples, is just like, because it has shape and color, then it's something that appears to the sense consciousnesses, so it's not the ultimate Buddha. I'm blanking on the second. Sambhogakaya. The Sambhogakaya appears to the pure disciples, but it also has shape and color, so it doesn't truly exist. It's not the genuine Buddha.
Then Papa Sanjo Samba the Samasola Satambula to Nase Mapa, Turpa Ja. Turpa Riri Lang Kot Jaja Turpa Sombare, the Sutamje, then a Mulan Chitopjus on the Dunyan Tari. Turgi Ramare, Turpa.
Kare
Satambola Turpa Ja.
Lare?
But they Turpa Re, Turgi Mare.
Satambola Janju Sampa. Trupa tetso, trushi mare,
trushi mare, trushi mare, trushi gendale.
No, sir. So, for example,
Lonyin tembandaore. Lonyin tembu mateke, Lonyin seva jataka te una zuni gare, te zuni remado, mune mochini de marva.
Vela.
O tendaore. Lonyin e shepa po de kakale. Yako zuni nawa.
For example, when you get to the first Bodhisattva ground, the noble Bodhisattva ground, then you can emanate 100 emanations in 100 different places at the same time, and each one of those emanations can be surrounded by 100 students. That all of that is your own emanation. And you're not any one of those emanations, any one of those emanations is not you as the Bodhisattva. The basis for the emanation is somewhere else. These are just all images that are the emanations. And how can we understand that? Well, it's kind of like the example of somebody giving a speech on television. And so the person who is the basis for the emanation is somewhere, but their image appears on all the different television screens. But that's not really them, that's just their reflected image. That's how it is.
Then I get down that turba the damage pity, in a yantin, tanta mamma book, turba the end of the something. They meet the pill at the end of the chamber.
So, one thing that we should remember is that the emanations, the tukus, are classically an example of appearance and emptiness. So, they are not truly existent. These days, a lot of people look at the tulkus and think they're truly existent. But that's a mistake, because the tulkus are not truly existent. They're just dependently arisen mere appearances. Let's read chapter 9, an examination of what comes first. With experiences of form, sound, smells, tastes, and bodily sensations, if the self does not truly exist before these experiences, how could it possibly exist after them? Know that the self is a dependently arisen mere appearance.
De tam go bu jun zhen de ni de de ba jiu jie ji nang ni de ba nga ge gan za ze yu zu ke ling ge de gan za ze yu zu ke ling ba te khile te dopche to sombare deyu te zuta teru riza rekpe ngaru to zuta teru rekpa pu kanza te yobar da par te tab yo na zuta teru riza rekpe ngaru te da te ke yena zuta teru riza teche do rek par tar va ta tha de yena kanza nga yen par tar va chung ta tene ya siru je da te ngaru je da te yena tene da takpa yen ba ta ngaru je da te siru je da te ngaru je da te mayena ngaru je da te che siru je da te jume du sung chung yore di se na tene kanza duyu me de bare
This is the chapter that specifically addresses the idea that the five of the 18 sub-schools of the Shravakayana had, that there's a substantially existent self. And it's basically the idea that I, the self, as the experiencer of perceptions, exist independently of the perceptions. Before the perceptions, I, the experiencer, exist, then I go out and have the experiences, and then I exist after the experiences too. So that's what Nagarjuna examines here, the idea of the independently existent experiencer. And he shows that it's impossible for such an experiencer to independently exist, because if the experiencer exists, the experiences must exist. Because you can't have an experiencer without experiences. So the fault of saying that the experiencer would exist before the experiences is that all of the experiences would have to exist too at exactly the same time. And if you said, well, it's a different self for every experience, then as many experiences as you had, you'd have that many selves. Another way to think about it is that if the self exists truly, then is it the same self that exists before the experience, during the experience, and after the experience? If it is, then that self is permanent. But if it's a different self, before, during, and after, then the self that existed before then somehow just went out of existence to be replaced by a different self during the experience, to be replaced by a different self after the experience. So either way that you assert the self as being truly existent, you fall into either the logical extreme of permanence or extinction, and neither one makes sense.
Kate te tab zeyu je da yueba ina, tene dame gomba tharpa lanta mede bare kari seno, zeyu je da yueba dame sabate tene loki chogare, tisena tharpa lanta mede bare.
Karesana tartula dame togere.
Mamma. Da yuna, they did da yuna, dama me sabe tabu, pala samba de hiramare lo cure. Then it dame, loci gona tapacadito.
Rosa.
Mune da yuna, dame samba de lo hiro. Then loci gona tapacadito.
Also, it's actually, if you think about it, impossible to attain liberation as long as you have this idea that the self truly exists, because what you're meditating on is selflessness, but you don't believe in selflessness. You think that the self is really there. So how could you have an accurate belief of selflessness if you still believe in the self? Then that belief in selflessness is just an opinion. And if you compare it to your actual feeling, then it's not even an accurate opinion. So that type of path doesn't lead to liberation.
Mamme se mula chek to shenpa ta mamme ho ta cho juen to juen la chek to shenpa ta enda wa yere
We should examine the way that we think about ourselves and see that what we're doing is confusing the continuum of separate moments to be one differentiated thing. So we think, when I was a kid, I did this and that. And then last year, I did this and that. Well, that's the same thing as looking at the candle flame that's burning and saying, the flames that I lit in the morning is still burning. It's not the same flame at all. It looks the same, but because it looks the same, we think that it's just one thing. But that's just a confused projection of our thoughts. There's nothing there that's the same at all. And therefore, the baby that was just born is not a self, is not something different than a self. It's just a dependently arisen mere appearance. And when we die, then that individual who dies is not a self, is not something different than a self. It's just dependently arisen mere appearance. And therefore, death does not truly exist. Death exists as a dependently arisen mere appearance. Is an example of fire and firewood. When you rub two stones together, the firewood that appears does not warm or glow. Know that it is the same mental afflictions or suffering, they do not come or go. Here we have to first understand that the fire we're talking about is that fire that appears right when you rub the sticks together and there appears to be a flame.
Anger is something to be meditated on. You can meditate on its true nature. If you realize that it's the true nature of mind, you can meditate on it. So we'll stop here for now, and then at 3:30 we'll meet and read together the sutra quotations and the verses from the Fundamental Wisdom of the Middle Way itself that that go with these first 10 chapters.
So that's what we'll do at 3:30 with the chapter 10. Then the verse from the sutras is actually two verses. It's very beautiful and very good if you memorize it. And there are a couple other verses like that in the text where you have not just a single passage, but a whole verse. And when that's the case, then it's good to recite that verse a lot and to memorize it. Now we'll meditate a little bit.